Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being here with us. We got a really nice Wednesday for you because we got a really nice chaplain for you. Our chaplain is here. It's Ask a Priest today. If you have a question appropriate for a Catholic priest, whether it's a theological question or a more pastoral question, either one, welcome. Give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. As always, you don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody can call. If you got something you want to ask a priest, this is your chance. Father Sam Keyes is our chaplain. Father, welcome back again.
Thank you.
I feel like great I haven't done this with you for a while.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah. Has it been a while?
It's been like did
I miss
a
one?
A month or so.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're back. Yeah. I am glad you're back. At what point should we try to explain your life to people? Like, should we shock, allow the people to be shocked?
Well, I mean, I could take the next 2 hours to explain my whole life story. I'm sure that'd be...
Well, that does sound enticing, Father, but no, let's do a radio program. As you said, somebody sent me an email and they were like, you need to explain this priest because it's scandalizing. And I was like, we can't explain it every 5 minutes. Like, just deal with it. Because I guess this person tuned in somewhere in the middle of the show and re-mentioned your children.
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
were like, a Catholic, a priest with and, you know, yeah, so yeah, I, yeah. then the hyperventilating began. So, and now I feel like I'm making fun of the person who wrote. And I don't mean to make fun of this person. It's just that we literally can't explain it constantly, every time. So,
yeah,
Father has children, deal with it.
I have the Holy Father's permission.
Yes.
I do, actually.
Yeah, you know, right.
Not to have children, but to be married and to be a priest. That's that. I don't explain it that much. And I mean, obviously, in my parish, people know me, and that's kind of doesn't really require explanation for the most part, because they walk in and they see my children squirming around.
Half,
and
the, half of
making
the congregation
noise.
Is your
yeah,
actual
right.
children.
It's true. It's true. It's true. Like when it's a sizable chunk when you know you're only a handful of families and you have one family with like 5 or 6 kids or whatever. Don't show up. You do miss them because they make an impact.
Right.
Sometimes when I'm in other places, especially if I'm going to make reference to my children, which I don't, I mean, I don't do that all the time. I mean, by any means, but you know, it does happen, because children do make a great, example. I mean, there's a sort of, this is, I face back in my days as an Episcopal priest, you always kind of, you have to walk a fine line because, you know, it's certainly, okay to, you know, kind of talk about, you know, one's family and kind of anecdotes from one's own life and in sermons and homilies and things. But you also don't want to kind of put your family on display in a kind of way that's embarrassing to them or kind of unfair
right,
or
right.
whatever, right? It's not, you know, you know, I don't want my kids to be like, oh, you know, you're the one that, you know, Father's always talking about, like, you know, like,
oh, you're the bad one.
Right. You're the one who, you know, gives them trouble.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, call and ask if you're curious. And if you're not, that's fine too. If you just want to talk to a Catholic priest, we got an actual real Catholic priest here, 888-318-7884. And if you have a question, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. How many kids you got?
I've got 5.
Yeah.
And we've got one on the way.
Congratulations.
Well. Thank you.
Congratulations. Looking forward to meeting that new little fella.
Yeah, we just found out today that it's a girl, so that's, you know, that's we have a pattern.
Can I suggest a name
just
to
kind
you?
Of alternates.
A beautiful
yeah,
little girl's
okay,
name.
I need names, yeah.
And it is a saint's name.
Okay.
Cyrilina. I think that would be such a good name for a little girl. don't you think? You don't think so?
That's interesting. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. That's, well, thank you for saying it's interesting.
We'll put it on the list. We now have to think about it. About girls' names. I mean, baby naming is fun. I mean, of course, everybody has their opinions. You know, I've for much of my life I've been in various educational institutions, and so for you know, every time I've had kids, I've had a whole chorus of people arguing for different names.
For different names? Oh, yeah.
I had one back when I was at a boarding school in Maryland. I had one student. She was she was from China, was studying at this school, and she now I'm blanking on what the name was, but she picked her own name. This was when my third child was born, and she picked her own name, and she continued to call him that after he was born.
I don't approve of that.
And we were like, okay, that's not his name, but
I'll call her Serena. Whatever.
It was Unferth. It was a name. It was Unferth. Baby Unferth. It's a name from Beowulf. I remember because I had her in.
Well, now I've changed my view. I do approve of what she did.
I remember like we were expecting when we were reading Beowulf, and I made some joke comment about how like, oh, Unferth, that'd be an interesting baby name, and this girl just like latched onto it.
Unferth. 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll start with Anne in Colorado, listening on, or maybe watching on. I don't know what you do on one of these, but on the Roku. Anne, glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Father Sam Keyes.
Hello. My question is about grandparents who secretly baptize their grandchildren. And would that be, I know that is illicit, but would it also be invalid? And would the same thing hold true if a parent did the same thing? You know, they were having a fight and the husband decides to baptize the children?
I think it's a pretty straightforward question in that what is required for validity for baptism? That's very clear. Form and matter. So you need water. You need the words, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Right, there can't really be any variations on that. There were some controversies recently. You know, you may remember from the news a couple years ago about some clerics who were using an invalid formula. But anyway, so if you're using that right formula, if you're using water, and you intend to do what Christ instituted. In other words, when Jesus said, go and baptize all nations, if you intend to do what he instituted, that's a valid baptism. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you are, et cetera. So I would definitely say that the kind of baptism in the kitchen sink of whether it's grandparents or parents, that would generally be illicit unless it's in an emergency situation, right? So if you have a child who is you reasonably think this child is about to die or something, and you're doing an emergency baptism, that you know, the laicity of it changes based on that circumstance. But if it's more of a, I'm doing this sneaky thing, you know, or kind of sneaking around, doing something that maybe the parents wouldn't approve of or something like that, that would be illicit. So hopefully that answers that question.
However.
Oh, yeah,
illicit is very serious. It would be a grave sin to intentionally break the law.
That's right. So I don't want to. I don't want to, you know, be flippant about that and act like it doesn't matter. I mean, laicity does matter. I mean, it's a matter of our kind of obedience to the law of the church, and of course. There are all sorts of other illicit things, right, that people do in terms of liturgy and sacraments and so on. And there's a, you know, there's a variety of, you know, gradations there, you know, in terms of liturgical abuses or kind of different kind of ways that people might do things illicitly in terms of the sacraments. It's not something you should do, and it is serious. And but if it is done and it does need to be reported, right? So if you're, you know, the recording of a baptism is an important thing in terms of church law, you know, it may not seem that big of a deal at the time, but you know, when that child grows up and maybe they want to get married or something, and they go looking for a baptismal record, and it's nowhere to be found, and they have to kind of consult family. I mean, these are things that, you know, are part of the good order of the church, and they need to be taken seriously.
Anne, I'm going to say thanks and leave it there because we got to take our first break. We'll be right back with more Ask a Priest on Catholic Answers Live with our chaplain, Father Sam Keyes.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
If you have a few minutes a day, you can become an EWTN media missionary in your parish, in your community, or through prayer. Be a part of Mother Angelica's mission. Place your gifts and strengths in service to Christ and His church by volunteering your time and sharing the eternal word with the world. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Father Sam Keyes. He's our chaplain here at Catholic Answers, and we're sharing him with you for this hour. If you've got a question appropriate for a Catholic priest, something you'd like to ask a Catholic priest, whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. Going up to the cool town of Corona right here in California, Eric, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Eric, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Go ahead with your question for Father.
Hello, Father. Good afternoon. My question had to do with the Didache. I was reading in chapter 15 how it says, elect therefore for yourselves bishops and deacons worthy of the Lord. I think the word that kind of got me a little confused was elect, unless there was a different meaning that they meant it. But I always thought that the bishops and deacons were not elected. They were sent by the church to where they were needed. Would you know what they mean by elect for yourselves bishops and deacons?
Well, it probably means elect. There are many places. The process of the selection of bishops is something that has varied quite a bit. Obviously, the very first generation, right, are the apostles themselves who are selected and appointed by Christ Himself and are sent out, and in many cases they probably chose successors, to carry on their ministry. We certainly have record of many places where bishops were elected. That doesn't mean they were made bishops simply by the act of election. So by that, we don't mean like, okay, you win, so therefore you're the bishop. It's more, you have been chosen by the people, and so therefore, you know, the other bishops will then, you know, give you that apostolic ministry, you know, by the laying on of hands, you know. So there's, and in fact, I don't know today, there may be a few little holdouts in terms of, kind of old or medieval traditions where there are certain authorities that actually have a sort of right of nomination, even in the Latin Church, where fundamentally today, you know, all bishops are appointed directly by Rome, by the Holy Father. And yet there, I think, are a few little holdouts in terms of medieval agreements where maybe there's a sort of local entity who has a right to sort of nominate somebody to be made into a bishop. In fact, an interesting little example of that in the Ordinariate, in terms of our governance, the Apostolic Constitution, which set us up by Pope Benedict, provides that the ordinary, who may or may not be a bishop, in fact, but the Holy Father basically chooses between a turna, so a list of three names, men that are given to the Holy Father by the governing council of priests of the Ordinariate. So there are some places even today where the selection of bishops is not you know, just a kind of pure papal appointment. And we have there's some interesting stories. I love the story of Saint Fabian, who was a pope in antiquity, who was famously elected pope by the people of Rome because he dove landed on his head. I think that's the story. And they thought this is a sign of the Holy Spirit. And so, you know, but again, that doesn't mean, because even with papal elections, right, we have an election process, right? It's currently governed by the College of Cardinals, but it hasn't always been the case. I mean, the cardinals are something that developed over the course of history. Jesus did not invent the idea of cardinals. That is something that emerged in the history of the Roman Church. So I guess the key thing is to make sure you understand the difference between election, which is like how an individual man is chosen. That's a distinct thing from like the act of ordination, you know, in which other bishops are laying hands on and praying for the ordinand and you know, giving him that apostolic ministry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's almost as if people can elect them, but then it'll come down to the church authority whether or not they're ordained.
Well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
There's very little election left in the church today, and you know, you can have whatever opinion you want about that, but you know, it was much more common in the early church.
Wasn't it the case that Saint Ambrose was elected bishop before he was even baptized?
Oh, I think that's right. Yeah.
He had to be baptized.
I don't think he's the only example of that. Yeah. Where it's like, oh gosh, get this man baptized and then ordained, and you know,
there were some of them that hid. Yeah. They hid from the people.
Right.
The people wanted them to be bishop. They were like, I don't want it. But
yeah.
I don't know if Ambrose was one of those. But
keep in mind, you know, that in the churches are smaller. I mean, you know, and so when we're talking about the church, like we're talking about the Christians in a city, you know, with a single church, and so it was a congregation of people that wasn't huge. We're not talking about like millions of people, you know, having some sort of formal election, in the way that you would have an election now.
Eric, thanks very much for the call. Let's ask a priest today on Catholic Answers Live. We'll go to New York now. Jackie's in New York, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Jackie, glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Father Sam.
Hi, good afternoon, Father Sam.
Hello.
I have a friend who got married in the Catholic Church, got divorced, doesn't want to even discuss annulment because she has a child, got remarried. And I talked to her about going to church and receiving the Eucharist and how enlightening and wonderful it is. And she says, I'll never be able to do that again. So I told her to speak to her priest, maybe go to reconciliation. But will she ever be able to receive again? I'm not sure if I'm even speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope so. And I'm so glad that you asked this question, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about this topic, because you know, there are people out there, you know, pushing for some sort of change in church teaching, and basically saying that everybody should be able to receive communion. It's not a big deal, but actually, the church is already, you know, quite merciful in these situations. I mean, so, and I've had this kind of situation where I have somebody who, you know, is divorced and remarried. They can't. There's sort of reasons, maybe children, where they don't think they can just leave the relationship, but they can commit to living as brother and sister. So I mean, that's one option, right? That may not be an option that everybody likes, but if mm-hmm. if somebody mm-hmm. can say, you know what, I recognize that my marriage is not valid in the eyes of the church, and so I'm going to commit you know, to do everything in my power to live as brother and sister with my spouse, while I, you know, try to maybe do what I can in terms of church process to regularize this marriage, I would say that person is definitely welcome to come back to Holy Communion, right? Go have them go to confession and make that, you know, promise to the priest. And I think that is a place where the church does not, in fact, exclude whole categories of people, right? The fact of a kind of civil situation isn't what, you know, keeps you away from communion. It's being engaged in an act of sin. And in this case, it's, I mean, just to put it bluntly, it's having marital relations with someone who's not your spouse. And so if you can avoid doing that, then you can come back. I mean, be encouraged in that with your friend. But also, I don't know what the person's reasons would be for not trying to pursue this with the tribunal or with the church. But, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to who've gone through the process of an annulment have told me that it's a healing process. I know it may not sound like it, you know, to dredge up all of these memories of a kind of difficult
previous
marriage.
No, I totally agree. I've been through an annulment myself. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, and so you can encourage her, you know, on a very personal level with that. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why she has to be excluded from communion forever. I think there's all sorts of ways that she can come back into the communion of the church, and to work on the situation. So I admire you for, you know, thinking about this, and I hope that you can encourage her in your conversations with her.
Okay. I'll continue to pray on it and encourage her, and I know that God is good, so it'll all work out.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
All right. Let's go to Tom in Pennsylvania, also listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Tom, thanks for the call. Go ahead with your question for Father Keyes.
Hi, Father. Yes, thank you very much. I heard you talking about baptism earlier, and it's illicit for grandparents, for example, to step in and baptize a child privately if the parents don't want that, and I understand that. I very much respect that. My question is, when can you baptize another person as a layman? And I'm wondering about point of death. Now, certainly, if I come up upon an automobile accident and I see somebody's about to die and I ask them, would you like to be baptized as a Christian? Or are you baptized as a Christian? No, I'm not. Would you like to be? Yes. My understanding is that I could do it then. But what if I came upon someone who was unconscious and I didn't know whether they would baptize? Could I do a conditional baptism? And what about the grandchild situation where the grandchild is literally in the room and dead? The doctors have said, okay, child is dead. I don't know exactly when the soul leaves the body. Could a baptism occur then? And one of the reasons I ask these questions is I remember a story in St. Faustina's diary where she talked about being in a hospital room and someone in a room next door to her, she was given a vision, they're dying, go baptize them. They weren't baptized, so she baptized the person and she watched their soul, you know, move in glory up to heaven. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's private revelation, but anyway, so I'm going to hang up and I'll, well, I guess I'll stay on because I can't hear you. Drew, I got to be on the phone to listen to the answer. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure. Well, let me just kind of answer the second thing first, which is just about the point of death. And I would agree with you there, and I'm not familiar with that particular vision, but I'd say that generally the church would encourage us to err on the side of mercy when it comes to offering the sacraments. So that's a judgment call that's very, you know, difficult to make. I mean, I think if I go to give somebody last rites and I enter the room and they've just kind of, the doctors have like just walked out and they've just flatlined or something, I would think very seriously about go ahead and giving them the sacraments, because, you know, anointing them, because I just don't know. I mean, at exactly what point, you know, that kind of actual separation of body and soul happens. But that is really just a kind of prudential judgment that you have to make in the moment. You know, certainly if it's like, oh yeah, he died yesterday, let me go visit him. No, you can't do that. I mean, but if it's really close, yeah, there's a kind of point where you can make a judgment there. As to the question about somebody who is not able to communicate and baptizing them, with that, you know, baptism is a sacrament of faith, and it is something, of course, with the child, you know, it's the faith of the godparents and the parents, which is, in a sense, standing in for that child. But I don't think it would be a good idea to baptize somebody who you don't know and, you know, who can't communicate you with any way. You just, to me, that's stretching it a little bit too far, because you need that level of internal assent to what's happening.
Tom, thanks. I've got to take the break. As you can hear, we'll be right back with more Ask a Priest on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, What is God examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of What is God today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, it'll be opening day, and we'll talk to both players and theologians about the connections between baseball and Catholicism. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
I think I just heard Matt Swaim. Was that Matt Swaim who just said back to Catholic Answers Live? He's a good one. He's one of the good things about Catholic radio. I couldn't list all the good things, but I know he'd be near the top of the list if I did make a list. Father Sam Keyes is our guest. He's our chaplain here at Catholic Answers, in addition to having 47 other jobs and 6 children. He's a tired priest, but he's a helpful one. So if you've got a question, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Going up to Wyoming now. Justin in Wyoming watching on YouTube. We're glad you're here, Justin. Go ahead with your question for Father Keyes.
I'm set to join the church in 10 days. And
yay. Congratulations.
Thank you. I've just been experiencing a lot of doubt in the past week. It's been a long journey, and everyone's telling me it's spiritual attacks, and I don't quite understand the nature of them and why we're allowed to be spiritually attacked, so I just was looking for clarification and advice on that.
Hmm. Well, you know, the devil is characterized frequently as having envy. I mean, that's kind of one of the kind of central images that we get. And that's and not the same as jealousy. It's not kind of wanting what we have. It's a kind of hatred of the good. He sees the good that we have or that we are doing, and he wants to destroy it. That's kind of the envy of the devil. Why does God allow it? I mean, that's the kind of big question that's at the center of the human mystery. I mean, the short answer is that we don't know exactly why God allows anything in particular, right? I mean, it may be you on the kind of in the end of the story, on the other side of the veil in heaven, we may be able to see some sort of big picture way of understanding. Ways that God was allowing certain things to strengthen us or to kind of lead us in a certain direction. But, you know, God's allowance of evil in general is tied up with God's purposes in giving us freedom and free will. He's not coercive. God doesn't kind of coerce us in a certain direction, nor does he coerce his angels, in fact. So that's the kind of, you know, big picture reason. That doesn't necessarily make it any easier. But I think that, you know, what you're doing in preparing to enter the church, it's a very serious thing, you know. And I think that a lot of people will find that when they're doing something really serious spiritually, whether that's entering the church and being initiated into the church, maybe it's somebody who is taking vows or something in religious life or about to be ordained or something like that. In a sense, the closer we get to God, the more I think the forces of evil and darkness want to attack us. I mean, ask any priest. One of the things that I was told before I was ordained to the priesthood in the Catholic Church, I was told, you know, be aware. Sometimes when you're at the altar, strange thoughts will occur to you. In other words, there's this kind of moment in this holy sacrifice of the Mass. There's a moment of kind of intimacy with God that, in a way, is his kind of prime target, you know, for spiritual attack, you know, and so it's something, you know, I was told, you know, this is something you need to be on guard on and don't be surprised by, like, but be on guard about it. God bless you for you know, joining the church, I pray that you will have the strength to move through it. I would certainly, you know, rely on the people that you have, you know, who are with you on this process. I mean, I assume you probably have a sponsor for your sacraments, and it's something to talk about, right? Don't just kind of struggle with it silently. That's not what you need. The church is a kind of public institution, and so there's a reason why. Sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. So if you have doubts, for example, talk about them, right? That it's faith and doubt can go together, right? So you can have a kind of strong faith in the sense of making a kind of a firm commitment to something, even while you're not sure about some things in your mind. And that's okay. That's actually healthy and normal in a lot of cases. So just bring those questions up, have those conversations with people in the church, and you know, keep the faith as you walk through the next few days.
Okay.
Justin.
Thank you.
Yes, God bless you, brother. I want to suggest an article that I remember, and I found it while Father was talking. It's by Jennifer Fulweiler, who's a convert to the Catholic faith. It was in the National Catholic Register some years ago. It's called "We Need to Talk to Converts About Spiritual Attack." So maybe I can put it in the show notes. I'll give it to you, Darren, and anybody wants to look it up, just go to the National Catholic Register and put in Jennifer Fulweiler spiritual attack or something like that. But we need to talk to converts about spiritual attack. It's very, very good and helpful article. Justin, thank you very, very much. Call back if you want to talk about it again. We've got time between now and Easter, and we'd be happy to talk about it again. I'm going to go to Fort Worth, Texas now, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Annette in Fort Worth. Annette, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Father.
Yes, hi, Father. I have been married for 43 years, and I married a person that was very religious, and he was Nazarene. He didn't want to hear anything Catholic, and he would tell me so. And now, let me go back. He did convert to Catholicism after 7 years of marriage. He saw a vision, and it was Jesus, and Jesus told him, I want you to be Catholic. 6 months later, he was a Catholic. Well. And the problem that I'm having right now is his mother. Right now, she is actually 94, a very sweet little granny, and everyone loves her. And when my kids were early 20s, they stopped going to church. Mm. Well, in conversation with them over the phone, she found out that this person, one of our children, weren't going to church. And she would tell them, just go to any church, just as long as you know God. And she would continue telling this person until they went. Now she's working on my grandchildren. And, you know, I'm facing little nice granny, and I don't know how to communicate with my kids and tell them that this is not the real church, the one that Jesus established. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of asking, what could I say to my children and my grandchildren? Two of my children have left the Catholic Church, and I have three grandchildren that have left the Catholic Church due to her talking to them.
All right, Father, what can Annette say?
Well, that's a hard situation. Can I ask this? You may not know or be able to answer. I mean, how confident are you in that this is a kind of direct result of these conversations with, the great grandmother? I mean, or is this just kind of a, I know that these conversations have happened, and this seems to be the result of it. And do you care to comment on that at all?
Yes, it is a result of that, because not long after, they would go to a non-denominational church. Mm-hmm. And, so I didn't know how to respond. I know that one time I was talking to my husband, and I said, well, so-and-so, one of our children, has left the church. Mm-hmm. And she was there, and she responded to us, what do you mean she left the church? She's going to church.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't know how to respond to her. The children love her very much and sees her as their little granny.
Mm-hmm.
So going against what she's saying might get me in trouble.
Yeah. that's complicated. I think there's a way to speak the truth of what the Catholic Church understands about her identity without, going on the attack. I'll be honest with you, like it may be that there's not anything you can say. I think you certainly should pray about it, but given the kind of social dynamics of the family that you've just suggested, I don't know if there's a way for you to do it without because I don't I mean I know that there's been these conversations, but there may be some other things that have kind of pulled these children and grandchildren away from the church, and so you know I guess if I were to suggest an avenue of conversation, I would pursue it not so much with your mother-in-law, but with the children and grandchildren, and talking about, okay, well, what is it that you found there? You know, why is it that you have gone to this other place and not the Catholic Church? You know, is there something that's keeping you away? Rather than kind of going on the kind of offense of being like, well, that's not a real church, et cetera, et cetera. You know, to try to understand exactly why they're doing what they're doing and really kind of get more at the causes of it. That would be my recommended strategy, because if you kind of lead with, well, that's not a real church, you know, they don't have the sacraments. I mean, those things might be true, but they may not be in a place where they can really hear that. And depending again on kind of what exactly is their personal relationship with the church and what kind of stands behind that decision to leave the Catholic Church and to kind of be affiliated with a different non-Catholic church.
Annette, I have to go to the break, but I'd like to send you a little book we have called The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It. It's by our own Jimmy Akin. And it might be one that will give you some ideas about how to talk about these things with the kids and the grandkids. Hang on if you'd like it. We'll be right back with more of your questions for our chaplain, Father Sam Keyes, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, ewtn.com/family celebration.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kill, your host. Delighted to be here with our chaplain, Father Sam Keyes. I do want to let you know about the big winter sale going on right now. We waited until spring to start the winter sale. I don't understand it. I do not understand that. And it's not called the Final Four or anything like that. I'm surprised about that. All of our books are on sale. It's the most exciting Catholic sale on the internet. And I want to tell you about our brand new books, because these are all on sale as well. The new Relativism. I just got a copy of it. Here's a copy of it from Carlo Broussard's latest book, The New Relativism. And The Heart of the Gospel, Father Sebastian Walsh's latest book with us about the Beatitudes. The Word Set in Stone, the fun book from Dave Armstrong on how archaeology, science, and history back up the Bible. And then Trent Horn's new book, When Protestants Argue Like Atheists. All of those are on sale. Everything's on sale over at shop.catholic.com. I didn't get that book out for you to take it, Father. That is my copy.
I was just looking.
You need to ask Carlo to give you to give you a copy. I was just looking. Austin in Connecticut, listening on Catholic.com. We're glad you're here. Austin, go ahead with your question for Father Sam Keyes.
Hi, thank you for having me. So I don't mean to be long-winded, but so please bear with me. But so basically, I'm someone's confirmation sponsor this spring.
Okay.
And they're going to be received into the church during the Easter Vigil Mass. But mm-hmm. Recently, you know, it kind of hit me where it's like, yeah, I mean, I am a sponsor, so I'm basically kind of taking a vow saying that I'm a practicing Catholic, which I am, you know. I mean, the faith, it means everything to me. I go to Mass every Sunday, have a strong prayer life, things like that. But the problem is that I suffer from severe scrupulosity. And so because of it, I haven't received, you know, Holy Communion in 9 months. I haven't been in confession in 4 months. It's been pretty much a mess for me. I've been trying to find a spiritual director to kind of help rudder me through it so I can return to the sacraments.
Okay.
But basically, my question is, if I haven't received the sacraments in so long, and if I don't receive them before the confirmation ceremony, would I potentially be an invalid sponsor?
No. Okay. I'm going to keep it simple. There is nothing that you can do to invalidate the confirmation. Your role is as a support and an encouragement. You have a sort of official role in terms of the record, but it doesn't touch in any way on the validity of the sacrament.
Okay. And then I guess a follow-up question to that would be, I mean, obviously, you know, being scrupulous people, you know, it's common to always think you're in a state of mortal sin, right? So if I can't receive confession before the ceremony, and God forbid I am in a state of mortal sin, like, would that be something that's like sacrilegious on my part?
No. I'm trying to be pretty direct because you mentioned your scrupulosity. I don't want to leave any wiggle room here. There is nothing that you can do here that's going to somehow ruin that ceremony or create a sacrilege. This, you know, it would be a sacrilege if you were to knowingly receive Holy Communion in a state of mortal sin. Right, but that's not what you're saying. All you're doing is you're standing there, you're putting your hand on this person's shoulder and being a sponsor, right? Your own particular kind of moral status or state of grace is really not relevant to that sacrament. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I was kind of really anxious about it. It kind of hit me all at once. I figured I'd call just to ask and make sure. But yeah, I really appreciate you clarifying that for me.
Okay.
It brings me a lot
You're
more
welcome.
Peace.
You're welcome.
Good, Austin. God bless you. I'm sorry that you suffer in that way. I don't know if you know about there are groups for folks who suffer from scrupulosity. Do we have any websites or anything we can recommend? I know Jimmy has recommended them, but I don't have Jimmy here with me right now. But you said you're reaching out for spiritual direction and all of that. Is there anything else we can do for you, Austin?
Just another quick question. I mean, God forbid I don't receive during the Easter season, which is a precept of the church, because of the scruples. Would I be judged by God because of that? Because, I mean, granted, it's not really, it's kind of against my will in a way.
The precept to receive Holy Communion at least once a year, preferably during the Easter season. So, there is some, room even within the kind of church's law there. But I would just strongly encourage you, you know, just to find a way to get to confession and go ahead and receive during Easter. You know that you have a scrupulosity issue, and so at least hopefully on a rational level you can understand that you're doing, you know, what you can to be in a state of grace. That would be the main encouragement. I mean, really, really do your best to get to confession and to get to Holy Communion during the Easter season. But I don't think there's not some sort of automatic, you know, condemnation for not receiving communion during Easter. Again, the church's law simply says that you should receive once a year, preferably during the Easter season.
Austin, thank you. Thanks very much. Call back if there are more items we can help you with. I appreciate the call. I'm going to go to Leslie now in Texas, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM, satellite radio. Leslie, go ahead with your question for Father Sam Keys.
Yes, Father. Hello, Father.
Hello.
I have a question about the palms that are given out on Palm Sunday, and I understand that they're used to make the ashes for Ash Wednesday. When does one turn in those palm branches?
That's something you would need to ask your parish, because not every church does that. That is certainly a venerable tradition of burning the palms to make ashes, but you can also just buy ashes from the church supply company.
You make it sound romantic, Father.
That's something that's very local. So you need to just kind of ask your church. And hey, they may be like, oh, well, we don't do that. Maybe we should, you know, and you can see like, hey, let's have a big, you know, palm burning party or something. Ask your local church.
Thank you very much, Father.
Well, thank you very much, Leslie. Appreciate the call. The number's 888-31-TRUTH. It's Ask a Priest today. Lines have been quite full, but give us a try, and we'll do our very best to get you on with Father. 888-31-TRUTH. Adrian in San Jose, California is next, watching on YouTube. Adrian, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Father.
Thank you very much. Hello, Father. During the time that I was waiting to come on and speak with you, I had one question which was more theologian, you know, about the Bible, kind of like interpretation. But the last couple of callers got me thinking about something else. So okay. Would you want a theologian kind of question, or would you like a tugging at your heart kind of question?
Go with the tugging on your heart question.
Amen. Okay. How can I start this? Okay. Here in my house, I stay with my parents. I'm an adult. And my father, he's a catechist. We've always been very into the church. He's he's a Eucharistic minister. I was in catechism. I was an altar server, so on and so forth. So we should be on the same page. But like scripture says, how in the household, father against son and mother against daughter, I really feel that so much, that we are fighting over things that we should agree on. Hmm. We are there. I feel like almost that there's some sort of, I don't like to say it, but some sort of demonic infestation, where maybe he needs to do some deliverance prayers as the head of the household. From my understanding, spiritual world is very concerned with authority, and the head of the household over the mother and the son and the family, so on and so forth. So as a son living in my father's house, how can I make a difference if I'm not the head of the household with the authority over anything that could be, you know, demonic? And yeah, my father says, no, I'm not going to do it, don't worry. And he just flat out doesn't even want to talk to a priest or mm-hmm. a cleansing or anything. So mm-hmm. I really feel like there's something here dividing us, and I need to know what I can do.
Okay, I'm going to get you an answer just because we're down to about a minute and a half in the hour. So, Father?
Real quick. Look, being the head of the household is not some magical thing, right? So, there is an authority there, but that doesn't mean that you can't pray and offer prayers. As you probably know, there are various resources out there for prayers that the laity can use. Praying for deliverance from spiritual attack. Do avail yourselves of those things. Don't feel like you can't do that because you're not the kind of father of the household. If it's a real serious concern, and you really think, well, there's something going on here, then you should approach a priest and a local priest and talk it through. Okay, don't feel like you need to wait for his permission there. I don't think you do. Now, obviously, if it's his house, he does have a sort of authority there, right? But that doesn't prevent you from kind of talking it through with somebody and maybe getting some further advice about your particular situation. So.
And Adrian, we will leave it there. Thank you very, very much for the call. I'm just leaving it there because we are coming up on our break, and I want to assure those who are on the line, if you would like to ask a question of our chaplain, Father Sam Keyes, and you've been waiting, he's going to be with us here for another hour. And if you haven't dialed yet, there's going to be a line or two open during the break, so go ahead and give us a call. The number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I know, because we've already recorded them, that we'll also have a couple special episodes for you on Holy Thursday and Good Friday. So we will, on many stations and many of the places where people get us, we'll be preempted probably, because they'll be doing liturgical things or prayer for Holy Thursday and Good Friday. But we produce some special shows where we ask some questions of Father Sam Keyes. So if you usually join us via the internet or one of the other services, you can find us on Holy Thursday and Good Friday with some special shows for you. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Ask a Priest on Catholic Answers Live right after this.